It's All Things Considered on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. 20 years after a flu pandemic wiped out most humans and the technology they relied on, a troupe of actors and musicians travels the Midwest, presenting the works of Shakespeare. This year, the University of Tennessee selected author Emily St. John Mandel's book Station 11 as the Life of the Mind reading project for incoming freshmen. Mandel says making Shakespeare's work a linchpin of her narrative was a natural choice.
A lot of it came down to something my husband said to me a number of years ago when I was first starting to write Station 11. So I told him I have this crazy idea for a book about a post-apocalyptic Shakespearean acting company and orchestra. And he didn't laugh, which I appreciated. He said something that made a lot of sense to me. He said people would want what was best about the world. And that's obviously an entirely subjective judgment, which is to say a different author would have picked a completely different repertoire. But for me personally, one of the things that I would think was best about the world would be the works of Shakespeare. That was one reason. Another reason is that I was thinking about what repertoire makes sense for a post-technological world. So in the world of Station 11, civilization as we know it has fallen away. No more cell phones, airplanes, electricity, etc. And originally, I had the theater company in the novel performing works from a whole range of eras. So it was William Shakespeare. It was also David Mamet. It was also modern teleplays. I had them performing Seinfeld and How I Met Your Mother. And it began to seem increasingly incongruous to me that audiences in this post-technological world would really connect with works that are so much a product of the modern world, these comedies about the New York City real estate market. So I thought, well, perhaps it would make more sense to restrict that repertoire to earlier works. So I started to think more about what that might look like. And the more I read about Shakespeare's life, the more it seemed to me that there were some kind of interesting parallels between Elizabethan England and this post-pandemic world I was writing about. I suppose the most obvious is that in Shakespeare's time, theater was, of course, so often a matter of these small traveling companies setting out on the road, going from town to town. And I really liked the parallel there, the idea of a world in which such a company might again set out, with the age of electricity having come and gone. And there was also something much darker that I hadn't previously known much about. And that was the extent to which Shakespeare's life in particular, and Elizabethan England more generally, were marked by the episodes of bubonic plague that swept through the country again and again. And the more I read about that, the more it seemed to me that probably the people in that time, in Shakespeare's time, would have been somewhat haunted by their memories of pandemics in the recent past. And that was exactly the sense I was trying to create in this fictional post-pandemic future. So the more I researched and the more I read about his life, the more it just made sense to me that it would be an exclusively Shakespearean company.
I think in a broad sense, this novel prompts its readers to question what they think makes life worthwhile. To borrow from the book, which I believe came from Star Trek, survival is insufficient. You want something more to make it feel more livable, more well-rounded, more something more than just drawing breath and eating and sleeping. What are some of your criteria about what makes life worthwhile in that sense? And have they changed since you've written the book and have had these discussions on your mind?
It's interesting. I don't think they have changed very much. I heard that quote from that Star Trek episode, episode number 122, aired in September 1999, where a character says survival is insufficient. And at the time, it struck me, and it still does now, as the most elegant expression of something I believe to be true. And what that means to me personally is the arts. And for someone else, it might be sports. For me, being able to tell our stories is a major part of what civilization means to me, being able to have things like books and theater. I would say movies, but those are technologically dependent. So, you know, in if there were some kind of cataclysmic event where our technology were wiped out, I would like to think that those things might survive, that we would continue to tell our stories, so we would still have theater. So for me, it's largely books and music, a little bit of theater. It's family.
To go back to that and expand on it for a moment, Station 11, of course, in a broad sense, is about art surviving this apocalyptic pandemic that happens. I want to ask you about the present. A Western Civ professor of mine once told me that the word university comes from the same root word as universal. You know, it's you're going to learn a little bit of everything. And we might think about those ivy-covered campuses of the 19th century where you'd learn Latin whether you really needed it or not.
Right.
But in the last few decades, the people who were in charge of education policy, the elected leaders on both sides of the aisle, the leaders of higher education institutions, the people that control the purse strings, have really thrown their support to more of a vocational approach, science, technology, engineering, math, the so-called STEM fields that are more marketable. And the point of college seems to be less about broadening your horizons and learning and doing things that maybe not are so practical but interesting or worthwhile on a different level, and more about getting a piece of paper to secure a job. As an artist, as a writer, does that concern you?
It does concern me. I think, though, that ideally there should be some kind of happy medium. My middle name, St. John, comes from my grandmother. His name was Ella St. John. Her father, Newell St. Andrew St. John, which may be the most British name in the history of British names, he immigrated from the UK at 18, recipient of a beautiful classical education that in no way prepared him for life in any capacity. He would have spoken Latin and Greek. He did not have any particular skills and really foundered professionally as a result of that. So I do think that a university should ideally include some practical skills that might help a person in the world. But there is something kind of sad about the idea of universities becoming entirely vocational, isn't there?
Right.
You know, it's it seems like such a wasted opportunity to me in a way. Something that I think about a lot, because it does kind of trouble me, is the way that young people who I know, you know, some of them go to university with the idea of that being a process of expansion, you know, of encountering people they never encountered before, of learning interesting things for the sake of knowledge. A lot of them, though, are going there to study something that will lead very directly to a job, the degree in economics, the internship at Goldman Sachs, and, you know, whatever the track is that they've set, and really only spending time with people who are kind of exactly like them, socioeconomically and otherwise. And it kind of seems to me to be part and parcel of the same thing, you know, this this kind of narrowing of experience that I think we sometimes see in contemporary colleges and universities. And I don't know what the cure is for that. I think a lot of it has to do with valuing knowledge for its own sake. And I don't know how we return to that as a culture.
Which, of course, brings us to why you're in Knoxville, and that's to talk to the University of Tennessee's incoming class of freshmen.
That's right.
The folks who started just this semester, some of the folks you and I are talking about, who are making these decisions about their life, but are also being exposed to your book as part of the Life of the Mind program. What do you hope that this specific audience, the freshmen at UT, get from the experience of reading your book?
Well, I hope they enjoy it. That's the main thing. You know, I wasn't thinking of a younger audience when I wrote it. I wrote it as adult literary fiction. So I suppose that by reading it, they are getting maybe a more expansive experience of reading than probably quite a few of them have gotten before. You know, it's not YA. Maybe it will make them think a little bit about some of the things that we take for granted and how easy it is to take things for granted in general. And I say that with some hesitation because as a reader, I've never really liked the feeling that a book is imparting a message. You know, sometimes you'll be reading a novel, and it's a really interesting book, and then the author sort of hits you over the head with a sledgehammer. It's this feeling like, here is the message you're supposed to take from this book. And as a reader, that kind of bothers me. As a writer, what I found personally is that writing Station 11 was a really interesting exercise in terms of thinking through this extraordinary technology that surrounds us. And thinking about how extraordinary it actually is that we have radio and electric lights and airplanes across the Atlantic. So writing it made me take those things for granted to a lesser extent than I had before. And I suppose it'd be nice to think that reading it might have the same effect on some people.
I want to go to something you said just a moment ago when you alluded to the difference between what you write and young adult fiction, or YA as you called it. We've had a lot of popular YA novels and then adapted into films, and it seems to be kind of a hot genre right now. If you would just give me kind of an explanation, at least from your perspective as a writer, as a contributor to this field, where that membrane is it permeable? Is it like, how do you define one against the other?
I think it's very permeable. And, you know, I've read and really loved some YA novels as an adult. So, you know, I don't mean to suggest any kind of hierarchy there. But, yeah, you know, the whole question of genre in general, I think, is incredibly permeable. And it's something that I've definitely experienced as someone who's writing books that are both literary fiction, which is hard to define. I guess I would define it as fiction with an emphasis on character development and prose style, but that also maybe have a science fictional element. You know, much of Station Eleven is set so far in the future. So that has made me think a lot about how incredibly subjective genres are. You know, I read a commentary a while back that stayed with me, which is that, of course, Catcher in the Rye would be considered YA, you know, one of the great classics of the American canon. So it is extremely permeable. I think that ultimately it often just comes down to a marketing decision, whether a book is considered YA or adult.
You are a native Canadian. Mm-hmm. Do you reside today in the United States, or you still call Canada home?
I have dual citizenship. I was born and raised in Canada, but my father's from California, and I've lived in New York City for about 15 years.
Okay. Yeah. The reason I ask that is I'm interested in there's an idea in Canada that we don't have here in the United States, and that's sort of a protectionism of culture. There are Canadian content laws that tell radio and television stations a certain percentage of your programming must be devoted to content created in Canada by Canadian artists or some connection to the country. And I wonder if, though those laws, those rules don't apply to books, do you think that awareness in Canada makes it easier for you to get a book on a bestseller list or to have an easier entree into what might be a protected space for Canadian art that you might not have here in the United States, where books just pour in from every corner? Is it easier to be a well-known artist or writer in Canada than it is here? Easier to break into that market?
You know, before Station Eleven, my assumption would have been yes, just for sheer numbers alone. There are, 350 million Americans versus, I believe, 36 million Canadians. So it's a fairly small population, relatively speaking, and therefore a fairly small pool. But to be honest, I have a much better career in the U.S. than I do in Canada. I think I'm much better known here than I am there. And I really can't account for that in any way. You'd assume that being Canadian might give you a little bit of a leg up in that market. But that hasn't really been my experience.
Interesting. Well, it's probably multifactored. I mean, there are probably a number of sides to that Rubik's Cube. And my final question is, I understand that Station Eleven has been optioned for a film. What is that process like? I've read many, many anecdotes from writers who say, this is not what I wrote. This film is something totally different, because it gets kind of put through the ringer to go through Hollywood. What's that process been like for you so far?
It's been an extremely distant and sort of abstract process. I believe that at the moment, the idea is to develop it into a TV series, which is an idea I really like, because you have all of those plot threads and multiple characters.
It can be told serially.
Yeah, exactly, in a more expansive way. I think what you've touched upon, though, is kind of an interesting divide among writers. So some writers will sell a work and be absolutely horrified that it's gone through the ringer and turned into something different. Other writers are more of the school of just send me a check and do whatever you want in that Hollywood world. I'm a little bit more of the latter school, to be honest. I think that whatever a screen adaptation of Station Eleven is, I think it'll inevitably be very different from the book. And I'm actually fine with that. I'm really interested to see what somebody else would come up with, you know, with that same material. I guess philosophically for me, I just feel like once you've sold those rights, they're sold. It's not yours anymore. So, yeah, I think it would be different. And I hope it happens. It'll be interesting to see.
Emily St. John Mandel is the author of Station Eleven. The University of Tennessee has selected that novel as its 2017 Life of the Mind reading project for freshmen. Emily, thank you so much for an interesting conversation.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.